You're taken in the first round of the 69 draft by the Dallas Cowboys. You were the first player from an Ivy League school to be drafted in the first round, and it was a controversial pick, and I assume that it was because they didn't feel that Yale playing in the Ivy League played up against the talent of some of the other schools we talked about a little bit earlier.
Well, yeah, according to what I subsequently learned is that they put all the stuff in a computer. You know, your test scores and your physical fitness, you know, your times, et cetera. And it spun me out, and I was like third or fourth. You know, it ranked me third or fourth. And then it was adjusted by the coaching staff. And, I was there, you know, when the Cowboys, I think it was the 24th choice, I was available. And, you know, it's interesting. I tell this story. I had called. It's not like it is today, where the draft is televised and you know exactly. You can watch it on TV or hear it on the radio. Back then, you know, it was done pretty much in obscurity, and they would just notify the press, et cetera. And I had called a teammate of mine to tell him that he had been drafted by the New York Football Giants in the second round. And I pretended to be Wellington Mara, and I could hear him tell his teammates, his roommates, it's the Giants. And, you know, I went on and on about how excited we were to have him, et cetera. And, you know, just when I could hear him, whoop and everybody was getting excited, I started laughing and told him it was a joke. And then I locked my door because he was a pretty big guy. And you know, and then I don't know. About an hour later, I got the call from the Cowboys, and I pretty much thought it was somebody playing the same kind of joke on me. And as it turned out, you know, it was Gilbrand, and I think then he put Tex Schramm on the phone, and I'm playing along, and then you know, they put Coach Landry on the phone, and there was something unmistakable about his voice. I guess I had heard it on TV, and you know, and all of a sudden I realized this could be the real deal. And it was only when I got a phone call from the sports reporter for the New Haven Register that I realized it was the real deal. And it was just, you know, it was a shock. It was really a shock to me.
Calvin, you mentioned when we were talking about playing also baseball at Yale that you had no desire to go south of the Mason-Dixon line, and last time I looked, Dallas is south of the Mason-Dixon line. Did you have any hesitation for those reasons as well?
Not really. I mean, you know, I guess I considered Texas as being more west. I didn't realize, you know, and it is. I mean, it's as much south as it is west. But, you know, in my mind, it was more west than anything. And I didn't know what, you know, I had never been west of the Alleghenies. So I wasn't, you know, necessarily... I had no knowledge or no preconceived notions of what to expect. I guess when I, you know, when I flew out there, two things, you know, one, I thought, you know, I'd see a lot of cowboy boots and I thought, you know, sagebrush and all that. And it was a little different from, you know, the topography was a little different than what I expected because, you know, it didn't look like West Texas. It didn't look like the Texas of the movies, et cetera. And then, you know, this is only 6 years after, you know, President Kennedy had been, you know, assassinated. So that was, you know, also in my mind. This is the place that, you know, President Kennedy was assassinated. And that was still very, very fresh. And, you know, it was still very much a shock that that could happen in this country. And so those were the things that I was concerned about in terms of the moving. And then, you know, obviously... you know, I was going to a team that had Bob Hayes and Mel Renfro and you know Don Meredith, et cetera. And so that was a little sobering. You know, the thought that you know I was going to you know be playing with these you know the guys that I'd seen on television.
Let me ask you about the organization and the team because I think most people who think back to that period of time, if they've read North Dallas 40, that they probably got a different impression. And Tom Landry, I got to know pretty well over the years. He was a very strict guy. He was a religious guy as well. And I'm just wondering the organization, the way it was portrayed and the way it was actually was for a player who played in the organization, what are the pros and cons? What were the myths and the realities?
Well, you know, it was very corporate. I mean, you know, I think, you know, they elevated it, to a corporate level, and they did things in a very business-like, way, and made decisions, in some respects, the way it was portrayed was very correct. Although, you know, I think one of the people that I really came to like and respect, and I think he has been portrayed, very wrongly by a lot of people, was Gil Brandt. I thought Gil Brandt was a genius, is a genius, and a personnel genius. And, you know, that was a very human quality about him. Tom Landry was brilliant as a football coach, as an X's and O's coach. I don't know if he was shy, but, you know, he could also be very, you know, sort of cold. Tex Schramm, you know, was very business-oriented and very very tough, extremely tough. But, you know, obviously a genius in his own right when you think in terms of the things that he did, helping to make, you know, the Cowboys America's team, cheerleaders, the helmets, et cetera. And then we were owned by a guy named Clint Murchison, who, you know, I mean, he's like the forgotten man. He was the initial owner. And he left, you know, he left the football people alone, hired the best people and let them do their jobs. But I think, you know, when you look in terms of, you know, this whole stadium phenomena and boxes, et cetera, and the way these stadiums are financed, he was the first person to really come up with that concept at Texas Stadium.
Let me take you to January 16th, 1972. The site is New Orleans for the Super Bowl, and the Cowboys pick up their first Super Bowl victory by beating the Dolphins 24-3. And this was the second Super Bowl for the Dallas Cowboys, their second appearance. And they really had come into that game, had they not, with the reputation of not being able to win the big playoff games such as Super Bowl number 5 and the 1966 and 67 NFL championship games. Was that a stigma that the team had, the organization had, going into that Super Bowl?
I would even say that one of the reasons Danny Dunn retired is because, you know, he just got overwhelmed by that stigma. You know, we were always next year's champions. In fact, one of the writers, Steve Perkins, wrote a book called Us Next Year's Champions. And we just could not get over the hump. And so, it was a relief, I think, because finally we had won the big one. It was a really exciting time. I mean, you know, to see Coach Landry, who, you know, was so instrumental in so many of the innovations of the modern professional game. You know, finally get his due as the winning Super Bowl coach. I played on a team. I mean, people don't realize we played in Miami, and they had, I think, 5 or 6 future Pro Bowlers, I mean, Hall of Famers, on their offense. They had, Brian Greasy. They had Paul Warfield. They had Larry Zonka. They had Larry Little. I'm trying to think of their center, I think, is in the Hall of Fame. And we stopped them. They got 3 points, and we dominated that game almost from the beginning. Those 10 seconds when they start counting down before the final gun goes off, and as a team that you're going to be the winner.
Let me ask you about a couple of other players just briefly, because I do want to talk about the Redskins and also Cleveland here. But what are your memories of Roger Staubach and Bob Hayes?
Well, Roger's the kind of guy that if he were after your job, it'd be difficult to sleep because, he would stay up all night if it had to, trying to figure out how to get you a job. Very competitive guy, as competitive a person as anybody I've ever met. You hear stories about Michael Jordan, and Roger has that same level of competitiveness. A great teammate. He was just a sensational teammate. He's he and his family are friends of mine to this day. Bob Hayes was just a freak of nature. Even today, when we talk about him, we talk about just his incredible speed and, the things he was able to do because of that speed. Sometimes you'd watch him catch a pass and take two or three steps, and then he would just explode, and you'd almost think that the film had been spliced. Bob was a very easygoing guy, sort of a happy-go-lucky guy. Roger was much more serious, but both of them, I was very fortunate to have played on a team with both of them, and relish the fact that I was able to do that.
After 1 year in the WFL, you come back into the National Football League. You sign as a free agent with the Washington Redskins. Now you have played for Coach Tom Landry, and now, of course, you have George Allen as your coach. What was the dichotomy between the two? What were the similarities between the two, Calvin?
Well, the similarities that, both of them were great defensive coaches. They started out as great defensive coaches. I think George, Coach Landry was also very involved in the offense and believed in a multiple offense. George wanted a very simplistic offense. The thing that really stood out as far as George Allen was his understanding of the importance of special teams. Prior to coming to the Redskins, special teams was something you played until you could get off of them. George had guys who did nothing but play special teams, and that's all they wanted to do. He likened the special teams to the Marine Corps, where they would establish field position, and then it was up to the offense and the defense to make sure you didn't lose that field position. And, both of them were, had an incredible attention to detail. Obviously both are in the Hall of Fame. They were different in some respects, but in terms of their attention to detail, they were very similar.
Was the biggest difference between the two? One was a master motivator. I mean, George Allen and all the things he would say, halftime speeches and pregame speeches. And as you've already said, Coach Landry was a little bit on the quiet side.
Well, the thing that Coach Landry, Napoleon said you can motivate through fear or inspiration. Some people would say you can also motivate with money. There was a certain amount of fear, with Coach Landry. Because he could really get into you in those Monday meetings, the film sessions. But also, you were inspired because I never felt, going into a game that I wasn't, better prepared, not only physically but mentally. He made you feel and understand, that you were, you had a superior system. And so you went in with a feeling that you were better prepared, and you understood what you were going to do, and you were going to do it better than the other team. The thing that George did, George was a great motivator. I mean, an emotional motivator. He used a lot of tricks to get guys, up. The one thing that, George was is I remember 1 year he released two veterans. And the captains went to him and told him you can't do that to these guys. These guys are loyal Redskins. And George came and apologized to the team, and said, "Listen, I'll figure out a way to get them back." And I'm not sure how he did it because he didn't cut anybody to bring them back. But you just felt like if you gave your heart and soul to him, he was always going to give his heart and soul to you.
Calvin, I've got to run along, but this has been fascinating. Will you come back and join me again?
Sure, I'd love to, yeah.
This has been very insightful, and I think a wonderful part of football history, being the first athlete coming out of the Ivy League to make it into the National Football League to be drafted. Calvin, thank you very much. You're welcome here anytime.
Okay, well, you have a good day.
Calvin Hill with us, former NFL running back who played 12 seasons in the NFL, six of those 12 with the Dallas Cowboys, 4 years with the Cleveland Browns, and a couple of years also played with the Washington Redskins, and he went to Yale, first Ivy League player to be drafted into the NFL out of the Ivy League. We continue with more of you and America's Sports Talk Show.